Conference. We are pleased to welcome Yue Liu and Alfred Cuchiera for Saving Endangered Philippine Languages via the K-12 program. So please welcome our next presenters.
Thank you so much for coming on this Sunday morning, join us. And we're from the Philippines, and Dr. Cuchiera and I, we're actually true hitchhikers in this field because we are, our major is second language acquisition. So please enlighten us, feel free to enlighten us when you, anytime, okay? Okay, thanks. I will begin our talk with a little introduction about the Philippine maps, just in case you may not familiar with the Philippine geographic characteristics. We can see the northern part, the big island is Luzon, we call it Luzon, and then we have Mindanao, it's on the southern part. Then we have Visayas in the middle part, then we have Palawan. Okay, so I'm gonna use those locations when I explain the languages later, so hope I won't confuse you guys. Okay, so I will start with the Philippine language situation at the present. According to Ilustrata, there are 171 live languages in the Philippines. Other sources may say 175, so there are some discrepancies there. 61 of them are less than 10,000 speakers, and 30 being spoken by the Aita or Negritos in the Philippines. Negritos, the Negrito people live in the mountain areas in all those islands we just saw. So Professor Ilustrada said, it's not a coincidence that the most discriminated indigenous people have the most threatened languages. Let's take a look at it. 61 languages have less than 10,000 speakers. We have 100 million people in the Philippines. So these 61 languages are very vulnerable at present. And 30 of them, later on, I'm gonna show you the list that we have less than 1,000 speakers in some of those endangered languages. So the situation is really alarming. Look at that. We have more than eight languages that we have less than 1,000 speakers in 2002. Right now we're in 2015. Dr. Cuchiera and I, we tried to find out more information, more recent data, we couldn't. This is the latest data in year 2000, and we have two speakers in Rotagong. What happened to this language right now? We don't know. So I would think it would be irresponsible for us to say, oh, we have done enough. We preserve enough Philippine language, we preserve over 100, but we need to focus on those are really in critical conditions. We need to really do more. So that's actually the inspiration for us to come up with this little plan of our own, hopefully we'll put into action and help to save the endangered languages. Okay, we have four languages that's already extinct. And some sources will say we have eight, but it's still debatable if they are dialects or they're actual languages. So that's the situation there. So for our proposal, we identified four issues that we may come across as obstacles in on the road to preserve those endangered languages. One is political, one is educational, one is social, and the other is physical. So for political issues, prior to 2012, the Philippine educational system only focused on the two main languages in school, the Filipino language and the English language as the instructional languages in school. In 2012, the 10-year basic educational system transformed to K+12 program, which consists of kindergarten and 12 years basic education. As we can see, 2-year senior high school is being added. So the focus of this K+12 program is actually the mother tongue-based language teaching. It's very impressive, it's very encouraging, because now we think now these 171 language speakers, they all can be educated through their own languages, right? But that's not how it happened. Right now, formally, we only have 18 languages that are included in this mother tongue-based language education. So only 18 Philippine language speakers are actually enjoying this educational reform. So how about those endangered languages? How about the other over 150 languages, right? So that's the political issue. Educational issues. Children, parents, and communities are passive when it comes to education. Maybe because of the financial hardship, they would rather send their kids to the marketplace, try to sell something. And another obstacle is there's no existing written text in most of the endangered languages. Even we want to use that language, we don't have source, we don't have materials. And there's no perceived economic advantage in using one's endangered language. They would rather use major languages in order to get a better job. Social issues, like we saw in the first slide, they feel they're discriminated, so they're very suspicious about people who don't share that language with them. Of course, poverty is one of the main contributors as well. Physical issues. We have mountain terrain. Those people live in mountain areas and they don't have adequate infrastructures and natural hazards. Rain, typhoons, disasters can really cause damage. And we have the typhoons every year in the Philippines, as we know. So for us, we want to integrate the language preservation in this K+12 program. So our solutions are actually targeting these four mentioned areas. So for political solutions, I think finding and approval are the main focus for this plan. So we need the findings from the Philippine government, UNESCO, foreign supporters, and NGOs. So hopefully we can get enough findings for this. And of course, for DIPID and the K+12 committees to approve that we add on those endangered languages in the formal educational system so that we can get the support, political support from the government. The educational solutions, it's kind of funny because we think we need to have a middle person to negotiate, to communicate from the central government to the local government, local communities, so that they will understand why we're doing this and they will support. They will support us. So the local government, local community need a process of buying in. So we need the salesperson to fully explain the purpose and the importance of this action. So for the teacher trainings, we think rather bring them to the city, to the school system, we bring the school system to them. So we want those language speakers, volunteers from the local community who speak those endangered languages. So they are going to be the educators. They are going to be share the responsibility of preserving those endangered languages. Then we will train additional teachers, and then those teachers will recruit and train others to teach. Of course, the final phase, we hope that the language workbooks, dictionaries, grammar, and the pronunciation guide can be developed through this effort. That's actually on the beginning of our endangered language documentation, hopefully. So after all that work being done, then the schooling, we're thinking, in addition to the 18 languages, main languages as our mother tongue based language, a language in the school system. We adding on those endangered languages, we teach those endangered languages to the people from those endangered language speakers communities. And then later on we can add additional subjects by using that language. And then from small to big, we're going to teach major subjects in those languages. That will be ideal. We hope that will work, of course. For the social solutions, we mentioned the poverty, we mentioned the people are not educated to realize how important to preserve those endangered languages. So for us, we think this middle person need to have a passion to share the passion with us. We need that person to realize how important the language is so that when they go to the local community, they can educate people there. So the people will understand why we're doing this. So this can be done through workshops, seminars, community meetings, and festivals even. Of course, for the families, we want to provide the school meals for the students so that they won't feel like they are missing out because they didn't go to the marketplace to sell products. So they are educated as well as they're being fed. So make them feel a little bit motivated maybe. So physical solutions, of course, we mentioned the inadequate infrastructures. Then we do something about it. Of course, all those things we need findings and supports from the government. So for the local communities, we don't want to impose a burden on them so that the schooling, the venue for the schoolings, hopefully, they can determine where. May not be the formal classroom, could be the community gathering hall or wherever they feel comfortable with. So they won't feel, they are part of the plan, they're not being imposed upon. Okay, so I think that will be the end of our talk, even though we realize that the solution proposed in this report are very optimistic, but we believe that great things can only be accomplished through someone's vision. So hopefully we can have more and more people on board with us, and let's make this happen. Thank you so much.
We've got plenty of time for questions, so if anyone has any questions for our presenters, please feel free.
Yes, thank you for the presentation.
Yes, thank you.
Are you thinking of, would Cebuano be one of the languages that is a home language that then gets taught formally in the schools from Cebu City?
I will think so, because I think Cebuano is now being integrated in the school system. So if we have enough, but sir, I'm not sure Cebuano is one of the endangered languages, but
no,
right.
But are you thinking of using that kind of structure
right
to build on for the endangered languages?
Yes, sir. Because like I mentioned a while back, the mother tongue based language education, the reform is really good idea. But the thing is, the reason for them to have this educational reform is that they say, when my children who speak Kankanai go to school, they are not going to be educated in Kankanai language. They're going to be educated in the English language. So in math class, my children have to deal with the English understanding comprehension first before they understand the mathematical concepts. So the intention for mother tongue based is make the children, educate the children in their mother tongue language so that they don't have to deal with the language problems. Yeah, but right now the situation is, my children speak Kankanai. When my children went to school in Baguio City, for example, the Baguio City mother tongue based language education is based on the Baguio Ilocano. So my children don't speak Ilocano either. So what's the difference between being educated in English or being educated in Ilocano? Right? So that's the intention. So I think the concept is good. We just need more works. Thank you, sir, for your question. Yes, ma'am.
So I suppose that many of these languages don't have associated writing systems and probably not anything like a standardized writing system. So I wonder, in your vision for the future, what do you see the role of native language literacy being? Mm-hmm. Do you think that it's essential to have native language literacy in order to preserve these languages? Do you think it's a useful tool for bridging to broader literacy? I know that's often a goal in education, and I just wondered what you thought about its role in the larger program.
Well, I think that would be ideal that every child has the literacy in their own mother tongue. But of course, like you mentioned, that there are some endangered languages, we really don't have formal writing systems. So we have to start at the beginning. That's why we say we should document them first before we have our big dreams to be realized.
So establish writing systems that can be used in the school.
Yeah, that's the idea, yes. Yes, thank you. Yes, ma'am.
Are there any programs or any type of encouragement anything to encourage people
similar situation in Philippines. I would like to know if for each community they have the same program, or the community decide the program that they have or they want, or is the same structure?
Oh, I think the K+12 program is a national educational movement. I think it's supposed to cover every community. But of course, there are some for example, the remote communities, they may not have the formal school system. That's why I mentioned that sometimes the parents and children are very passive when it comes to the education. I hope that answers your question, sir.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Right. So I happen to know that SIL has been working in the Philippines for 60 years with many of these endangered languages. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering to what extent the SIL archive in the Philippines, in Manila, is a resource to the K-12 curriculum and those indigenous languages. I mean, I don't even know if the list of endangered languages that you're working with, is some of them have material in this archive?
Yeah. Some of them, unfortunately, we don't have the material yet. that's why the plan is to help develop the material. Of course, it's a long process, you know, but we have to start somewhere, right? So that's why we have to start to document them before they extinct, because we have already have four languages has already gone, but we cannot bring them back anymore, and there are other dialects, you know, are extincting or vulnerable at least. So we have to start to do something before, you know, we lose more and more Philippine languages. Yes.
Which languages did he say? He said he was working in the Philippines. I might ask him which languages he was assisting. Which languages were you assisting?
I didn't say I was assisting any. I work in the archives, and I work in collaboration with the archivist in the Philippines. So I know that, I mean, that's his specialty, but I work with him as an archivist.
one of the things that we are not linguists, actually, as she mentioned earlier, we're education people. One of the things we notice, you know, probably the most valuable observation that we can make from coming here to this conference, there seems to be a mass communication deficit. Maybe I can say it that way. You know, we've been trained to do extensive research in a sense of at least going to the community, you know, looking into what's out there. You know, in the city of Baguio, for instance, you know, there's a huge number of educational institutions. It's difficult to find anything that's documented. It doesn't mean you're not doing it. You certainly are. I was surprised yesterday when I gave my talk to find out that there was information that I didn't have because it's just not there. You know, information exists, but it's not available to the public. It's not available to scholars. So that's one of the problems I think we, as educators, that we've noticed. It's being done. Somebody's out there sweating and working hard. You know, it's got to be something that can be easily accessible. Today's a day of, you know, we're in the 21st century. It's got to be an internet that can be somewhat easy to find. Some of the things we notice is that some of the hardest working people are so used to, you know, they roll up their sleeves and they get out there and do the things that nobody else wants to do. But then there's nobody on the other end that's actually reporting this information in a way that the average scholar can get a hold of. I don't know if that sounds like you or not, but I certainly know when I was in a different field at one time. I was in a field of physics. I retired from the field of physics. It was the same thing in my case. Years of research, but I wasn't really getting the information out there to where people could you know, benefit from it. You know, I don't know if that helps answer the question. But.
Maybe we can talk later.
Sorry, I remembered. So is there anything to encourage the use of the endangered language like at home? Or is it kind of restricted? Like, do people only use it in the domain of education?
I think those people from the endangered language speaking areas, when they migrate to the city because of the employment or something like that, they quickly adopt the languages that they migrate to, because they feel like if they don't share the same language, first of all, they will never get employed at all. So they're kind of feeling like they have to learn the language. For example, if I'm a Negrito and I migrate to Manila, so I'm definitely will learn Tagalog because otherwise I cannot communicate with people in Manila at all. So of course if I have children, I will teach my children speaking Tagalog instead of my own Ita language. So that's the process of losing the language, put the language in an endangered situation. I think a lot of those kind of things are going on as well.
Do they also teach Tagalog in this like program? Or like Mandarin language as well?
They do. Actually, Tagalog is one of the 18 major languages that incorporated in the educational system right now. Yes, ma'am.
I work with the Monotone program in East Timor. It's based on the same, you know, it's the same UNESCO model, same program, and we focus so far on three local languages that are fairly healthy, pretty vital. Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to say thanks because we're soon hoping to branch out to some more endangered languages. It's nice to see that you guys are already kind of facing some problems. Well, it's not necessarily you're facing problems, but it's nice to know what those are in advance. So just, I wanted to say thanks.
Thank you, too, as well. Yes.
How many, like, it sounds like the Philippines, we have the same problem we do all the rest of the world, where
right.
A lot of people move to urban centers, and
right.
By doing that, typically mother tongue programs are not based on what a person's heritage language is.
Right.
It's based more on what's the heritage language in the location where they happen
right.
to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge problem, and I don't know that anybody's really solved that one yet. You know, in Canada, where I'm from, if you you're living in Alberta, a certain place, if there's Cree going on, you're learning Cree, even if you come from British Columbia or, you know, someplace where your language is in a completely different language family, and so you would be studying that language in the universities or the same way. If you're in it, going to the University of Alberta, you're probably learning that language that's local to that community, not the language that you come from. So, which is different from trying to get a language program going where it's traditionally spoken.
Right. We definitely have a long way to go, because even in our own university, we're not Filipinos. The reason for us to can be educated in the Philippines is because all the colleges there, you know, that you see big signs speaking English. So, you know, it's really hard for us to preserve those endangered languages when we have this world English or other major languages in a way, kind of in a way, but we are trying.
Yeah, one of the difficult things, and you've heard this in other talks probably, is to encourage the indigenous people to take ownership of the situation. I mean, we're all here because we understand the situation, right? We want to save the endangered language. There's many reasons why. You can imagine if we could convert one person that's a member of an endangered language community to take ownership of that same problem. Well, you know, I met a guy yesterday, some of you know him, Lawrence Reed, University of Hawaii. Yeah, Dr. Lawrence. Is he here? Oh, there he is, sir. You know, he spent, would you say, doctor, you spent practically a whole lifetime studying languages in the Philippines, you know, an entire lifetime. It'd be just amazing if we can get them to have the same interest, enthusiasm that somebody sitting in our audience has to spend his life studying indigenous languages and the languages of the Philippines. That would be just amazing. I'm sure you probably have affected the people over there, and that there are some converts that have taken ownership.
I'm sorry, I just walked in and I've lost the train of thought here.
Just in time to receive our recognition. Thank you, Dr. Reed.
We have time for maybe one or two more. Okay.